You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We're going to have a little analysis of what seems to be a pretty straightforward Megillah of the Megillos that we read for the various Yom Tovim. And, you know, usually when you think something's easy and poshut, you dig deeper in and you realize that there are many, many problems and questions we have. The first major question we have when it comes to Megillas Rus is just a simple explanation of the first couple of psukim contained in this Megillah. Now, as a hakdama, I want to mention the following. The mishpacha we're dealing with that are being discussed in this Megillah is the mishpacha of Elimelech. Elimelech came from a very, very distinct, royal, aristocratic, rich, frum type of mishpacha. The Gemara calls him from the Gedolei Hadar, some of the greatest people of his generation. Not only was he zocha of a tremendous chachma, he was zocha of a tremendous wealth, he was a tremendous bal tzedakah. And the Megillah starts off which what seems to be a simple, incomprehensible story. We're now on the first page of the, we have the psukim from Rus on the left-hand side, which is column C and column D. It says, Vayhi b'mei shveita shevtim v'yirav aretz, a famine took place in Eretz Israel. And what happens is Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda l'gur b'shtei Moav hu v'ishto shnei banav. It seems a person who's an ish, now ish b'tanach usually means an adam chashuv, he left a very important place of Jewish inhabitation, beis lechem Yehuda, and where did he go? He went to the shtei Moav, which was on the borders of Eretz Israel. He, his sons, and his wife. We now have identification. The Shemo Ish, who is this man who left, who ran away because of the famine? He is the famous Elimelech. The Shem Ishto, and the name of his wife, her name was Naomi. The Shem Shnei Banav, and the name of his two sons, was Mahlon Vikilya. Now, to see a little more of the yichus of this person, the Torah then tells us in a very, you know, indirect but very forthright fashion. Ephrasim, they were Ephrasimi beis lechem Yehuda, which means they were part of the aristocracy of beis lechem Yehuda. Vayavau stei Moav, v'yishab, they basically took up abode in this location. Then, without any reason, any rationale, the Torah tells us, Vayamas Elimelech Ishna Ami, we find him dying, and once again, Ishna Ami is mentioned, it's her husband. Many Mefarshim explain this to mean that he was a very dominant husband, she is a very faithful wife, followed him wherever he went. So if he was killed by God for going where he went, you can't blame her because she was the loyal wife following the husband. But Tisha'er hi ushnei baneha. She was left behind and her two sons. Now we come to a critical part of the text. Vayisu lahem noshim o'aviyot. All of a sudden, this very, very supposedly spiritual, aristocratic, very Bakavadika family are marrying Moabite women. It doesn't mention anything about these Moabite women undergoing any conversion whatsoever. Shema Shema Achas Arpa, Shema Shenis Rus, Vayeshu Shom Kesashon, and it seems they were married for 10 years. Now, once again, a tragedy befell the family. Vayimusu gam shnehem, Machlon v'Kilyon. The two sons, the husbands of these Moabite women, died. Vatisha Er Isha Mishina Yoledeh. I mean, Isha, she's the only one left from the original family, and unfortunately, she's now alone from her original mishpacha, and she now has to make a decision what to do. Vatokam hi v'kala seha, Vatosha b'stei Moav ki shoma b'stei Moav ki pokad Hashem es amo v'seis lehem lechem. It seems she decided that she's going to pick herself up, leave Moab, go back home. The Rebbeinu Shalom took away the famine. There's food once again in Eretz Yisrael and Beis Lechem Yehuda. And therefore, she's returning back to a place of origin. She is being followed by her two daughter-in-laws. So it seems all three of them are headed back to Eretz Israel. Now we come to one of the most puzzling parts of the narrative. Besides what seems to be intermarriage in the beginning, which is puzzling in its own right, especially if these are Gedolei Hadar, we now have Naomi's famous speech. V'atom Naomi l'shtei kalaseha, lech na shov na isha l'beis ima, yasa Hashem yimuchem chesek asha asisim ha-hameisim v'imodi. I advise you go back home, which means she basically told them go back to Moab, go back to your origins, go back to the place in which you came, God you paid the chesed, mida kenega mida, the same way you showed me chesed, you showed chesed to the meisim, Yitan Hashem lachem menucha, matzah menucha, isha beis isha. Basically, she wished them a bracha that she get married again and find a new husband. Vatisha glehem v'tisena kolom v'tivkena. You had an emotional break. Everybody started crying upon hearing this little speech. V'atayimena ala ki itach nashuv lamech. Initially, the response of the daughters-in-law were, no, we're going to return together with you back to your nation. Once again, Naomi is very adamant. V'atom Naomi shevna benosai loma telachna imi. Why in the world are you coming back with me? For I'm going to give you some good reasons not to. Ha'od libanim b'mei'ai. Why you lachem l'anoshim? Do you think I have any more children left? Do you think I'm even pregnant with boys? Or whatever it is to guarantee your husbands in the future. Shov the benosai, yelchno ki zekanti miyos la'ish. I'm too old to get pregnant. Kamati yeshli tikva v'gam ha'yisa la'ilish v'gam yod l'ban. Even if miraculously I find a Jewish husband tonight and I get pregnant and somehow I have children that are going to be born to me. Halahenti sabena. You need to tell me you're going to wait for these little babies that might be born 20, 30 years in order to marry them and be agunais? Is that what you want your life to be? But it's sabana asha yigdalu halahena tegena levilti yoslish. Alba noisai ki marli ma'od. The whole situation is very bitter for me. She now says that whatever happened to me, my husband, my children, is Hashem's punishment, and that's it, I'm in Kabul. Tziduk Adin, what happened? Once again, a very emotional moment between her and her daughters-in-law. And now we have the famous split. Vatishach Arpa Lachamosa Vorustov Gaba. Arpa picks herself up, gives her mother-in-law a kiss, and goes back home, and Rus is adamant to stay with her mother-in-law. V'atom mehinei shov yivimtech el amo v'lehecha. Now, Ami doesn't beat around the bush. He says, listen, your sister-in-law went back to her nation, she went back to her gods, she went back to her earlier lifestyle. Shuvi achra yivimtech. To me, it's logical you should follow her footsteps and return as well. Vatomarus atifki bilazvech. Don't try to force me to forsake you, to go from away from you, go backwards. Where you're going to go, I'm going to go. You're going to sleep, I'm going to sleep. This is probably one of the most famous quotes from Tanakh. Kasha Tamusi Amus, you die, I die, Vishame Kaver, Koyasa Shemli, Viko Yosef, Kiamavis Yafir Beni Benech, one of the most famous, beautiful, emotional statements of love of a daughter in law for a mother in law you find in Tanakh. Vateira, and then the Tanakh records that Naomi saw Ki Misametzis Leleches Ita, that she's adamant to return with her. She no longer broaches the topic of telling her to go back. They return to Beis Lechem. This rich, rich, aristocratic woman had everything at her fingertips. Comes back. She looks Aram. Could this be Naomi? She said to the people, I'll take her enali Naomi. Karenali Mara, call me the bitter one. Kihema Shakali Ma'od. Ani Malaya Halachti Varekim Hashivana Hashem Lama to Grenali Naomi. Vashem Onabi the Shakai Herali. Whatever happened, she was Matzikadin, Sarabana Shala. Vatasha Nami Varusa Madiya Kalasa Ima. And what happens is Hashavu de Moav veMabo beis lechem mikubitchilas k'sir sa'orim. Now, when you read this, besides the shock value of people who were supposedly gadol hadar, all of a sudden being portrayed after Elimelech dies that her sons marry Shiksos. So the question is, do we take this as pshita shemitah? And what is interesting is that the Medrash Rabbah, B'Shem Rav Meir, and parts of the Gemara in Baba Bas we learned in Daf Yomi a couple of days ago, in fact, do take this literally, that they never converted these Moabite women. They, in fact, married Shiksos. In fact, the Medrash seems to imply the reason they died was because of the Chil HaShem of marrying non-Jewish women into marriage. People on that darga is simply incomprehensible. And that's another reason Ali Melech died, because he basically made the family leave initially and put them in a matzav that this is going to happen. So could obviously you then say to yourself, okay, so they were married to Shiksos, they died, they were punished. So she's telling her daughter-in-laws, you're goyitis. What are you coming back to me for? I don't have any other Jewish boys who are going to marry Shiksos where I'm going. So therefore, the best idea for you girls is go back. Go back to your parents, go back to your mother, your father, go back to your gods. There's nothing for me to basically offer you for the future. Now, the fact of the matter is, as pshuta shemikra, that seems to fit in. The concept is difficult to understand, but it sits in. And then all of a sudden, we see Arpa taking her advice, Rus and Naomi having a heated discussion, and Rus making these emotional statements. All of a sudden she stops and she takes her back. So the question at the end of the day is, did she bring back Rus as a Shiksa Moavite woman with her to Eretz Israel, with realizing what the consequences are going to be? Now what is interesting is, as if we're going to read certain psukim in the column D, she is referred to continuously by the people of Beis Lechem as a Moavite woman, which would seem to basically, on a pshuto shemikra level, indicate there was never a gera, she brought back a shiksa. But if she brought back a shiksa, and we don't find any geras being mentioned over here, how can Boaz, the head of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, or Ploni Almoni, who was his uncle, have a debate of whether or not to marry her or not as part of the redemption of the land, the homesteads? What are they debating about? Who wants to marry a shiksa? There's something. There's a lot missing from the text over here. Let's just say the pshuto shamikra is very, very difficult. And on the contrary, we find later on that when ultimately speaking, we find Boaz talking to her personally. I want to just show you the lines over here that have to be seen before I get into my halachic analysis of this. We have the following statement made by Boaz to her. First, Boaz told her that he's very happy to makabel panim, that she can stay in his fields all she wants, collect as much food as she desires, and therefore she has no reason to go anyplace else. So he's very gracious, b'teras chesed. And then he says the following. He then says, and this is really peladic, v'tipol al paneh, I'm now running to the page, the pasuk yud. She falls down in front of him to give, like she bows down to him. Why am I finding so much grace in your eyes, Boaz? To give me such recognition. Anochi Nachriya. Now, Nachriya can mean very simply, I'm a foreigner. So why are you showing so much grace to me? What does he say? Vayam boys v'temelah. I heard all that you did with your mother-in-law. After your husband died, you forsook your father, your mother, Eretz Malad, the place you were born. You joined a nation you never knew from before. Hashem should pay back with your deeds. You've come under the wings of God. What? Excuse me?
Yeah.
But the problem is, Iker Chasa Min HaSeif. You read the Pesuk about... One sec. We're gonna get... But I'm saying you read the Pshut Al Shamikra. There is no Geirus mentioned.
But she's no worse than Eliezer to Avram. Why is she any worse than Eliezer to Avram? He's as beloved to Avram as she is to Nami. Why do I have to get excited?
Because over here we're going to have very shortly. Boaz is proposing a marriage to her.
That's later on. No,
but
that's not in the, that's not in
but
the story.
But there's no Geirus mentioned there either.
That I agree, but at this point, I'm saying
that's exactly
saying
the point.
That's later on, but at this point
at
in the
this
story,
point,
she's no worse than Eliezer.
Yeah, but the fact of
and
the,
nobody would say, "Well, why do you have an Eliezer
no,
over there?"
But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, she says, "I'm a Nochria. Everybody's calling me a Moabite. Why you show me so much chesed, so much wonderful? Is I heard all the great things you did. He mentions forsaking this and that." There is something missing from the safe, my dear friend. With all due respect,
I'm just saying.
Reading Pshuto Shamikra, you have to be bewildered. You can't read this at the beginning of this Megillah without feeling tremendous pain and anguish, especially if you have a Daf Yomi Nikah and you learn Daf Tzadik Aleph and Daf Yomi, that they were Gedolei Hadar and Panasei Hadar, and they're given such accolades. Who ever heard of Gedolei Panasei Hadar having their children marry shiksas? I don't care how
that I agree.
You
that I agree. Right. That's
so
a problem.
For this reason,
that's a big problem.
So for this reason, you have in Chazal, in Torah Shavah Pekas, in Torah Shavah Ksav, you got problems. Two different mahalchim had to deal with this. As I mentioned before, the Pshuto of Rav Meir and the Medrash Rabbah, and the Pshuto of many parts of the Gemara Tzadi the Aleph and Baba Basra seem to indicate that initially they did marry shiksas. And that in actuality, when the Amis told them, go back home to your God, to your people, she was telling shiksas, go back to your original lifestyle. They were benos malachim, they were great granddaughters of the Moab king. They came from aristocracy. They had covet, they had oisha, they had everything they could possibly want. What the heck are you coming back with me for? You know, It's one thing when you have a nice, rich Jewish boy who's an aristocrat and has a lot of money. Just look at today's generation. They all want Jewish boys for their daughters. It's an amazing phenomenon. And just look at the presidential candidates. Allah will have a nice Yiddish boy who's rich, an aristocrat, whatever it is. So we understand the initial attraction meets out the girls to the boys. But the boys are no longer there. She says, Greg, guess what? I can't find too many other guys Beis Lechem Yehuda with the richness and the aristocracy and the yichus that are going to marry girls like you. So if you ask my humble opinion, go back home, you'll be more matzliach. So therefore, if that's the case, when Orpah left and went home, Naomi did her a favor, and basically she went back to her non-Jewish roots. The question is, Rus is adamant. So very good, she's adamant and she's an auction, which you saw, she shouldn't convince her. So what happened over here? So the Medrash Chazal tell us that what they had over here, now listen very carefully. This was a Tekufa Rabbi, so we know historically from the Rambam and other places, that they were not Megayit Gerim too quickly in Klal Yisrael, because they always were Choshed, they were ulterior motives. There's an entire sugya in Mesechtes Yevamos, Chav Gimel Amaveis, that's where the sugya is, which talks about the following question. If a person undergoes a mice of Geiris for ulterior motives, even though they say, I'm a Makai, Mitzvahs, whatever it is, but there are definitive ulterior motives motivating them, there's a machlokes tanoim whether the geiris that takes place has any halachic validity whatsoever. From the Gemara is Dava Pashat is, if I'm only doing this, l'shem Dava Acher, if I'm doing this for ulterior motives, I want to convert to Judaism because I want to marry a nice, rich Jewish boy. That's one ulterior motive. Number two, I was promised money if I do it. Number three, Sarah, I was promised some type of position if I do this. Or there's a pachid, there's a fear, like you had at the time of Purim, that Goyim converted to Judaism because the Jews seem to be have the upper hand. So if there are ulterior motives, if that's the only reason you want a Megayer, there's no Kabbalah Samach V'Shemayim, Kabbalah Samach Mitzvahs, and the whole thing is a non-starter. The debate in the Gemara in Mesechtes Yevamos is what happens if you have multiple kavanas. Shem Shemayim v'Dava Acher. And there, even though there is an opinion of one Ma'ad Amar, that Shem Shemayim v'Dava Acher, it's very nice Shem Shemayim, but the Dava Acher cancels out the L'Shem Shemayim and makes this also, as far as they're concerned, a non-starter. And lichat chila, we are normally machmi in the world of halach and hilchas geiris to only want the candidate to do this l'shem shemayim. But the ultimate psak of the sugya Mesechtes Yevamos is that bidi eved, if you can prove it was l'shem shemayim and dava acher, both bidi eved, we will kasher up that geiris and allow the geiris to be chal bidi eved. And that's the way we paskin in the Rambam. The Tzibur we pass in the Shulchan Aruch and Yehudeya, Shem Shemayim Dava Acher, if there was really Ela Shem Shemayim, the Geiris is Kasher B'dieved. Now, the only problem is that up until the death of the husbands, according to the Mahalach of Talmud Bavli and in Baba Basra, and according to the Pashtus of the Medrash and Rav Meir, there was no Geiris that took place whatsoever. Chazal say, and the Gemara Yevamos says this explicitly, when Rus and Naomi have this back and forth, even though the Gemara doesn't spell it out, what Naomi was doing was acting as a coach on behalf of a local, what they called a Beis Din Shel Hedyotis. This wasn't an official court of an extension of the Beis Din HaGadol, because they were very suspicious. So there was the Beis Din Rabbanan of Hedyotis that were roaming the fields and serviced this community. So she started asking questions that a Beis Din would ask when it comes to a potential Ger or Gioris candidate. And every time she pushed another problem, what about Shabbos, what about Kashrus, what about Tiftaras Mishpachas, and the Gemara teaches her words to refer to this, Rush showed a total dedication, whatever it takes for Geris to take place, whatever Achrayas I have to have, Shabbos, Karish, Taras Mishpacha, anything, whatever you do, I'm going to do, your God's my God. It was at this juncture that the discussion for potential Geris took place, when Rus was adamant that she was not going to be dissuaded. Nami saw that she has a good candidate, even though the Tanakh doesn't mention. It's assumed by Chazal she took him to a Beis Nishal Hadyotos, presented her as a Ger candidate. They officially were Megayer at that point in time. So the Ger took place post her husband's death at the juncture of this discussion. And by the time she returned therefore to Eretz Israel, at Beis Nishal Hadyotos had already been Megayer in the fields of Moab. So she brought back a Geyaras, but a Geyaras that became a Geyaras after the death of her husband. But during the marriage to her husband, she was basically a full-fledged shiksa according to that version. Now, if that's the case, we'll get to it. The comment later on in Perek Beis of Boaz is referring to that event. I heard exactly the chesed that you showed to the mason, the chesed you showed to your mother-in-law, your adamants to stay with her, and therefore, if that's the case, it appears to me that the geris you did was L'Shem Shemayim, and since it was L'Shem Shemayim, therefore, I as the head of the Sanhedrin HaGadol and welcome you in. Now, why was it L'Shem Shemayim? So if you notice very carefully, he mentions various factors. What were the factors? The factors he mentions that makes him feel that she is a good candidate. It was told to me, the chesed you did after the death of your husband. What does that mean? That it wasn't that you basically, halacha lamasa, just wanted to have a nice Jewish boyfriend or a husband. But the fact is, even when your husband died, your willingness to stay with Naomi and to convert to Judaism went forward. So I can't say the ulterior motive was that of basically marriage, because you didn't have, and she told you, I don't got any guy for you in the future, so you might be an agun the rest of your life. So therefore, that's not the ulterior motive. When it comes to richness, aristocracy, srara, mammon, you're a daughter of a princess. Look at your mother, your father, your malalika. So if you left all of that, that's a verity, that's a surety, that's a vadai, and you're coming to me over here where there's a big suffix, what's going to be your life? You might be an aniya and deal with matnas and even the rest of your life. It wasn't for those ulterior motives. And fear? You don't have any fear of us. You didn't even know who the Jewish people are all about. We weren't in a military mode at that time, ruling over the Mideast, threatening people. So none of the ulterior motives that Sanhedrin looks for when it comes to a gear of the Shem Shem Devacher applies to you. I only see your ultimate return and conversion as purely L'Shem Shemayim. If it's purely L'Shem Shemayim, I am therefore pronouncing that you are therefore welcomed into our midst. And not only that, the fact of the matter is, I'm going to say that the whole reason you joined us is what? Bas lachzas tachas kenafav, it was kula l'shem shemayim. So that's version number one. Now, version number two, if you turn to Rabbi, to page number two of the Maamar Kleimais, is the Zohar. The Zohar, quite obviously, has a little different opinion, to say the least. And on the right-hand side of the page, on page 2, what does the Zohar say? The Zohar says, Shol Rav Paras Lebrei, Shol Rav Yossi Issocho, Rus Kevin Shinez Gaira, since she underwent Geirus, why didn't they call her by another name? He thought Rus was her Moabite name. Amalei Kach Shemati, the shame Acher Hayila. No. She had a different name as a Gayit, as a Moabite. Ukeshenis Leis Lamachlon, Karashma Rus. The name Rus is the name they gave her after she married Machlo, which also b'shem zeh, Dorka Shenises Lamalchion Nizgaira. According to the Zohar, Machlon Vekilion would not have any Havamina to marry these two Moabite princesses unless they acquiesce to Makabal Teravamitzis Lamacha Shemayim and convert L'Shem Shemayim. So the Zohar says it's a Dova Poshet that after she converted the Halach, they basically changed her name, they gave her a Jewish name. So he asked the question, but if that's the case, so why after their husbands died, if they underwent a conversion, and even if it was a L'Shem Shemayim V'Dava Acher, which is B'di'evet Kusher, how in the world can Naomi try to dissuade two Giyarisim that are Kusher B'di'evet to basically forsake Judaism, forsake their Chiyuv Mitzvahs, and go back home? What in the world was this Naomi thinking? What gave her the right to do what she did? But obviously these questions would have been asked by a Beis Din before she ever married Machlon. So Mustafa Ibechaz and Yetzer were repeating again, Shelos, if the Geris is good, but the Evet. So Amalo, so the Zohar says, Chas v'shalom, Shanasa Machlon v'hinachris. To think and contemplate, like someone is saying, that Machlon married her and she was still a Shiksa, is incomprehensible. Elikah Shanisais, when he married her, Nizgaira, there was a Beis Din there, and the Beis Din was Megayaher. But we have the following phenomenon. Ubecheskas Emes Bala Umda. We'll see what this means very shortly. Under the fear of her husband, she stood. V'arpa be'inzeh. Kimishamesu Balayim Arpa Chazor Lesirchona. Rus Umda Betaima. Neshova Vintech Alama Velaheva. Rustav Kabakamashahoyusa Bechila. Period. Now, when you look at the Zohar's version of this, Rabbi Isai, the narrative changes a little bit. You feel a little better. And that is, these Gedolei Hadar, these boys, they were basically in a Moab environment now. And, as I said before, the attraction of nice, rich, Jewish boys is there even for Moabite princesses. Whoever may profit the shidduch, we don't know, but the shidduch was made, and the girls were told, you want to marry us, you have to convert to Judaism, and these are the requirements, these are the prerequisites, and Beis Din delineated, and we assume that if the Beis Din out there felt that they were sincere, that the Beis Din confirmed it, so by the time there was chuppah v'kedushin, they were marrying Moabites who converted 100% to Judaism without a shayla. Now, if that's the case, two problems. By what right did Naomi then have to push Arpa away and to mislead her, to go back to become a shiksa again, to go back to your God, go back to your people? I mean, that's a lifna even lo se tamichshol problem. And number two, if Rus's conversion was already a good conversion, why is Naomi having a discussion with her as if she's now a Gieris candidate? This discussion was had with her 10 years before when she married Machlon. So what's going on over here? Whichever way you interpret it, it sounds a little better over here, mitzad the fact that the boys didn't marry Shiksas. But mitzad the other questions, you still got questions over here.
What kind of Gieris took place before the marriage?
So there's no question that the marriage had to be looked upon as a Shem Shemayim V'Dava Acher, but whatever we pass in, it's a Kasher Geirus. So you know, there's no question mitzad that it seemed to be a Kasher Geirus. That's why the Kash is. So what the heck is Naomi doing over here? What's going on? So the answer to this Mahalach, Rabbi Isai, this is important, is that What I'm going to tell you now is b'shem one of the great tzaddikim of the early 1900s, Chaim Ozner Grudzinski, famous Gadol Hador of the 1900s. He was the rabbeisha in the world at that point in time in Europe. And in his Achiezi, he has a whole piece on Gir Kahalacha. And in that piece, he says, I want you to know the following. We have a principle. First of all, in order to do Geris, you need a Bezdin. You can't do Geris without a Bezdin. You can't do it by just, you know, people deciding to join. So that has to be a percussion of a Bezdin. Now, the Bezdin themselves, when it comes to normal issues, Dinei Torah Kedemah, we have a principle, Ein Ladayin Elamasha Ein Avroyes, Masha Ezen of Shamas. They base their decision on the litigants' discussion, the debates, the questions back and forth, what they hear and what they see, they make their halachic determination. Says the Achiezer, that's only because when it comes to commercial chaysha mishpat shelavs, which are ben adam lechavero, we paskin dvarim shebalev, einin dvarim. So if you're making a contract with somebody in some business deal, a real estate deal, and you have in your heart certain stipulations you want to put into the deal, but you never articulate them, they're never written down or articulated, they are halachically irrelevant to the ultimate consummation of the contract, because dvarim shebalev, einin dvarim. I only can paskin based upon what I hear and see. Says the Achiezer, but when you're dealing with a Bezdin, dealing with Geiris, we got a problem. Because Gir Kahalacha means I'm a Kabbal upon myself, all Machu Shemayim, all Mitzvos. It is primarily a Ben Adam Lamakam phenomenon. And when it comes to Ben Adam Lamakam, we have our principle, Rahman Alibaboy. The Rebbeinu Shalom is concerned what you mean in your heart and your brain, not with you, what you just merely articulate with your lips. And therefore, if there is an umdana demuchach, some type of indication that you might be saying the right things, yeah, I'm a Kabbal Torah, Mitzvah, and the Rebbeinu Shalom, you say that to the Bezdin, but the Bezdin has a suspicion that you're full of baloney and that you really don't mean it. And that in your heart and mind, you're just saying this to be yotze, the questions and answers of a Bezdin, but you really are not going to sincerely do all of this. We have a principle, Ben Adam L'makom, Tevarim Shebelev Havi Devarim, and therefore, that can then be used later on by the Bezdin. If they can prove, when you said what you said, you really didn't mean what you said, and you were falsifying your statements, and later things that you do indicate that the Dvarim Shebalev was, you're not going to be a Shema Kashris and Taras Mishpacha and Shabbos. You know, you're a guy, you're a couple, and all of a sudden you see later on, they're no longer keeping Torah Mitzvah, so the whole thing was a bluff. If the whole thing is a bluff, your Kabbalah's all Mitzvahs and Torah was zero of zero value, they can retroactively be Mavato the Geiris, and return you back to your state of Goyishud without a question, because Dvarim Shebalev Havi Dvarim, when it comes to Ben Adam Lamakom, and if you can prove later on the Geiris was a whole big hoax and a farce, there is retroactive, ultimate, total invalidation of the Geiris. Now, says therefore the Achiezer the following. Naomi, as the Zohar says, was always concerned that when these girls were Megayah as Moabite princesses to marry her sons, and even though they said the right things, and even though after the marriage for 10 years, they were Shema Kashrus, Shabbos, Taras Mishpacha, there was no hisrashlis whatsoever when it came to Torah V'mitzvahs. So you'll say, so if that's the case, what's the Dvarim Shebalev to Mevatel the Geiris? So the Zohar says, and he's very careful in his phraseology, she said she was a lamda in this Naomi, going to make her into a big lamda. She said to herself, you know why they did what they did? She'emas ba'aleim aleihem. Their husbands were frumax. They were b'nei g'dolei hadar. And when they saw their wives, they analyzed every day, is she really keeping Torah and mitzvahs? If they got wind for 1 minute that these wives were insincere and not keeping Torah and mitzvahs, the marriage would not have lasted for 10 years. It wouldn't have lasted for a year. So Naomi was suspicious, but it could be Afo P.K. These are good actresses. Amos, Baleim Aleihem. The true test of their real willingness to be Shem Shemayim V'Dov Acher is when the Dov Acher no longer is there. And that is the boys that they were initially attracted to disappear from the scene. They're dead. There are no longer any Jewish boys available for her to give. So now she's going to test them that if the Dov Acher, that was the major reason that they married them immediately, is accentuated, is there going to be any response on their part? Is there going to be an ability for them to show a change of heart? Or are they going to be adamant, even though there's no husband anymore, I'm going to continue with my gayrus?
Why is she pushing?
What?
Why pushing?
What?
Why pushing the challenge?
Because she suspected at the end of the day, because it was not normal for Moabite princesses to marry aristocratic Jewish boys who were very rich. She always, you know, oh, listen, Ayida Shemama is Ayida Shemama. What? So the fact is, she gave him a bechina. And the fact of the matter is, when Arpa left and went back, it showed that when it came to her, the bechina was perfect, because it was begalul amafreya, that l'shem shomayim dava acher was really never l'shem shomayim. The whole thing was dava acher, and the fact is that the whole thing was a farce. The whole thing was, so therefore she's telling her, the geirus doesn't mean anything. I can't give you a husband in the future. You're still a Moabite. Go back as a princess. Go back to your god. There's nothing for me to do. I can't help you. So Arpar was resolved. L'mafreya, as Rav Chaim Ozer says, you come off key the geris l'mafreya. But when it came to Rus, she saw that Rus was adamant, so she then posed to Rus the following questions, which are not delineated in the Tanakh, but delineated in the Gemara Masechtas Yevamos. Are you going to keep Shabbos with all the halachas of Shabbos? With all the chumras of Shabbos? Are you going to basically continue, yeah, now at this point, in kashrus, or taras mishpacha, or she went through every possible difficulty, and Rus's answer is, whatever I was makaba, I'm makaba, whatever you do in Yiddishkeit, I will do the same exact thing. Even if I die without ever finding another Jewish husband, I don't care. I want to return back to you and to your God, which meant to show that for her, there was zero ulterior motive, because she had every reason to go back, and no more a Jewish husband in the present or in the future. Srara was not promised to her. She's not coming back with an Arnema. Freud, who has no money, everything's been sold away. There was no fear of the Jews upon her. All the ulterior motives you looked for were totally absent. So when Rus showed to Naomi her adamance that her geirus was purely l'shem shamayim, she stopped speaking to her, she stopped hacking her a chaynik, she was mekabel her, and now was going to present her as a full-fledged geirat tzedek, not of the new, but she was a geirat tzedek going back from the beginning before she even married the son. When later on, basically speaking, she comes back, so for Shtich, the Haman Am in the street, they don't understand this. They're calling her a Moabite, a Moabite, a Moabite. The Cheshit is not, it's purely L'shem Dov Acher. However, Boaz said, I investigated this. I heard what happened over there. I spoke to the heads of the Bezdin, Pumagayu, I spoke to Nami. And when I heard the whole story, I came to the conclusion, as they did and as she did, that your gear kahalacha was purely l'shem shemayim, and all the ulterior motives that might have been mevatel that, or might have put that in suspicion, you have disproved. Therefore, I am pronouncing 100%. You've come purely to come under kanfei hashchina, You're now welcome as a full-fledged Jewish into Klal Yisrael with all the privileges. So you had the head of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, even before marriage came up, giving a verification and an ultimate halachic value to what took place at that point in time. What Naomi did was an act of pichus. It clarified it, took away any sveikos. So by the time Boaz met with Ruth, whether you have the first version or the second version, she was declared a full-fledged kashrut Jewish woman, and the gerus was validated. That's for sure. The pshuta shamikra is difficult because, you have the positives and negatives of the shaka vataria between the Zohar and the Medrash, but the bottom line was the same. Which now brings me to part number two. Part number two is that if, in fact, technically speaking, she was a kashrut yidden at this point in time and accepted by the Sanhedrin HaGadol, when later on Naomi basically convinces Ruth to go to Boaz and make the proposition that my husband died, my children died, their ancestral fields that should be redeemed by mishpacha members, and their dead neshamas. Now the mitzvahs even didn't exist over here because there were no brothers. But we do know there is a concept of Gilgal neshamas and transmutation of neshamas going back to the ma'isa of Tamar and Yehuda in the Chumash. If you look back in the Ramban over there, Ramban says that when you have a Yibum taking place, the neshama that left this world without children is somehow magugal over to basically the child that's going to be born from the couple coming together. So there is a concept of Gilgal neshama saving the neshama. So Naomi felt and Ruth felt, listen, I had a machlam of a kilyan, especially going to the second pshat, she was magarika halacha. Why should his neshama be lost without having a surviving child who could have the neshama come in and give him a new life? Good. The fact of the matter is, Boaz accepted the proposition, but he had one problem. He had an uncle, Ploni Almoni, who had a kedima in redemption of properties, so he had to approach him first. So he brought 10 people together at Beis Din. And he said, listen, Ploni Almoni, we got over here a pidyon karkos, we're mishpacha members. You're the uncle, I'm the cousin. The fact of the matter is you have kedima, but there's a tanai over here. That whoever's going to redeem the lands has to promise to marry the widow so that the Gilgal neshamas can be preserved as well. Now, you're not mechuyev to do such, but that's the tanai upon which this deal is being made. You have kedima. The fact of the matter is Ploni Almoni refused, and in fact, the Lushan, if you look now, Rabbi, it's in the second Maram HaKamas I give out tonight, on the right-hand side, it says, La'ucha ligal ki pen ashchis es nachlosi. Ploni Almoni says, I can't do this because if I do this, I'm going to destroy my inheritance, my children's future. And that's what he said to Boaz, that but for that reason, I'm not going to do it. And therefore, you want me to be mocked the Kinyonim, that you have rights now to rego the properties of Kedaima, I'm willing to do such. You hock your cup against the vant, I am not getting involved over here. Now, so the obvious question which everybody asks, and this piece I have is really the Brisker Rav's piece. So the Brisker Rav has a very simple question. Once the Sanhedrin HaGadol, led by Boaz Paskin, that she is purely L'Shem Shemayim and the Geras is 100% kosher, what in the world was the reason that the Ploni Almoni had a fear it's going to have an impact upon the Yichus and the Kashas of his children in the future? If she's a full-fledged Geras Halacha L'Masa, what is he worried about? And number two, he is worried, why is Boaz not worried about the same exact thing? Boaz had no fear of it, and he did have a fear of it. So what's going on between Boaz and between Ploni Almoni? So says the Brisker Rav the following Chiddush. This is going to be part two before we finish tonight. And that is the following. In Teresh Shabbat Peh, the Rambam delineates to us in his Perish L'Mishnayis the different levels of Teresh Shabbat Peh Moshe receives on Har Sinai. There is a group of Torah that was called Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. With the Rabbanu Shem told Moshe, this is the Halacha, this is the Psak. There's not even Psukim to basically represent this. It's purely Torah Shema Peh. There's never going to be a debate about it, a discussion. And this is the Halacha from Torah Shema L'Doros without a question. And he gave him a list of Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. A lot of the Torah, especially when it comes to minutiae, the Rabbanu Shem said to him, that I am not willing to give you a psak halacha upon. What I showed you up in Shemayim is how you can take these sugyas of Shas and have mutually exclusive machlokas and memtes pan and lakan, debates which are polar opposites. And despite the fact they are halachic debates, and I'm telling you now, as the way the Chazal portray it, Eilu ve'eilu divkim chayim, I created this manushe in such a way that there could be multiple maskanos if you dash the Torah using yugam midos shatar nedreshes behem. How you ultimately paskin these shelos will be based upon rov of the Sanhedrin, acharav lahatos. They'll determine who the halacha goes like when it comes to psak halacha. But there's a concept of multiple truths. Both are basically theoretically or halachically correct in the debate, but the row will be kavei halacha. Now, says the Brisker Rav, that up until this time by Boaz and Ploni Amoni, the halacha of Moavi v'lo Moavit, Amoni v'lo, which means you can't accept the male members of Amoni and Moavi into Klal Yisrael forever, but you can accept the women. This was a mesorah of Torah Shopet that was floating around. But the big debate between Boaz and between Ploni Amoni, is this a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai? Or is it based upon Yugam Amidah Shatar Nedreshes Behem? My nafkamina. If it's a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, it will never change. And therefore there can never be a kilkul in the future. But if it's based upon Yugam Amidah Shatar Nedreshes Behem, the Rambam already paskins in Perek Beis in Hilchas Mamre that a Bezdin who uses Yugam Amidos to come to a halachic decision in one generation and the Rov paskins that way, in subsequent generations of another Bezdin Gadol comes with, who's not Gadol Menim v'Chacham Menim, doesn't have to be, and they learn the Yugam Amidos and they come to the opposite halacha, and that's the way the Rov paskins, then the halacha will change and be paskin in the opposite direction in subsequent generations. It doesn't mean it goes l'mafreya, but mikana lahaba, it will be basically viewed in the opposite direction. So comes along the Brisker Rav, and he says this was the problem of Ploni Amoni. He wasn't convinced this is a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai. So he says, if that's the case, that I can marry her now based upon the way you, Boaz, and the Beis Din are paskening, I'm covered. I'm marrying a woman that you're telling me is a full-fledged Giyares and Mutal Levope Kahal. But what about 100, 200 years from now, my Enoch Lach are going to live in a generation that they're going to pasken that a Moabite woman cannot join Klal Yisrael? What's going to happen is in the Yiddish Kehilos, rumors are going to start and rumors are going to tumult around that this Ploni Amoni's Einik Lach now come from a yichus of women that according to contemporary halacha is looked upon as a shiksa that can't marry into Klal Yisrael. You're going to destroy the reputation of my children. I can't allow that to happen. Now, it might happen that they'll never change and the Bezdin will not revert to the other opinion, but I can't take the chance. So therefore, the initial debate between them was, is it a halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, or is it Yugam Amidos that can be changed later on? There's a Gemara in Yevamos that tells us, Rabbi Isai, this debate brewed and brewed and brewed until the tekufa of David HaMelech and Shaul HaMelech and Doeg HaDomei Ukedaymer, where when Shaul saw there's a good possibility that David HaMelech is going to take over the Maluch HaKadaymer. So the question was, you know, halacha lamasa, can he become a king based upon his initial origins going back to Rusam Avia? At that point in time, Doeg HaDomei, the wonderful Doeg HaDomei, what he basically put into the mind of Shaul and to the people, that the fact of the matter is, this is Yud Gimel Midos, and the fact of the matter is, I think the rov of the people of Bizman Hazar are of the opinion that Moavi excludes males and females. So forget about the fact whether he is allowed to marry as a Jew. She's a shiksa. If she's a shiksa, according to a contemporary rov opinion, it means he's not roi for malucha, period. Forget about being accepted as a Jew. He's not roi for malucha. So the mamish were out to destroy David's yichus, lock, stock, and barrel, all the way back. Comes along Amasa, and he says, my dear friends, I have a Kabbalah from Nevi'im, going back to Shmuel and Gedoymer, that this is ultimately a halacha l'Moshe Mi'Sinai. He took a sword and he said, whoever wants to disagree with me, I will tell you right now, I'm ready to kill you on the spot for trying to uproot a halacha l'Moshe Mi'Sinai. At that point, they were nimnu v'gamru, that it's a halacha l'Moshe Mi'Sinai, can never be changed, and therefore the yichus of Rus and the yichus of David was put into place. But that's why he says that Plutti and Moni and Boaz had a fight. It wasn't resolved about 4 or 5 generations later on. And the Rambam in Hilchos Asuri Biyah finally paskins, Moavi v'lo Moavit, halacha l'Moshe Mi'Sinai. So that explains that debate, that discussion, and therefore means that the yichus was 100% confirmed, Ludoris Rabbi Isai. Of course, you can ask questions why the Mashiach had to come from such an unusual mishpach with such an unusual yichus, but that's not for tonight's shir. But we do see from over here, Rabbi Isai, that behind simple psukim and discussions in this Megillas Rus, there is so much halachic debate and discussion amongst the Gedolei Olam to say it's only, there's no Tumah V'Tara Issa V'Heter, and it's only to teach you the power of Gemilas Chesed, according to this Mahalach, it's not really so, because there's a lot of halacha l'maaseh that depend upon this Megillah, and the whole kashas of Machlis Beis Bavit depends upon the resolution.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.